Hello, listeners. Welcome to the podcast if you are new here, and welcome back to the podcast if you're a regular listener. Thank you very much. We are Spooky Shenanigans, your podcast for all things spooky, creepy, and downright strange. I'd like to introduce your co-hosts, me, PJ, and also my other co-host. Funny that, co-host, usually two. Nell.
Hello.
And if you are new, I'm the cynic and she's the believer. Now, in today's episode, this is episode four. Can you believe it already? We are episode four. And in today's episode, we are covering the interesting case, to be more accurate, of one of the, if not the most haunted nightclub in the whole of the United States of America.
Do, do, do.
Now,
that can be done.
Yeah, that Nell's clocking off now. She's put her own 10 seconds.
Yeah, I'm done for the day. Bye, guys. You're on your own now, PJ.
Well, it's kind of funny because it'll be a very short episode if it was just me. Because...
Yeah, it would be a little bit, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because I'll be like, it's all rubbish. Go away. Nonsense. What's that? Oh, I hear stomp, stomp, stomp in the background. Oh, that's Nell coming back to smack me around the head.
Yeah, I feel like you all were from Manchester.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm safe.
Well, for now.
Now, listeners, if you are avid fans of the supernatural and the spooky, well, firstly, you've come to the right place. Secondly, you probably would have guessed what today's episode is going to focus on. And also, if you're following us on Instagram or Twitter, you probably would have seen the picture we posted of Nell doing her research, the lovely Nell doing her research. I must say, you looked really cute in that picture, Nell.
Oh, thank you. It took about 12 shots to get it right, but you know.
Funny, because you compare it with mine, where I look like a rabid dog maniac. Probably why you got more likes. But the more sort of observant of you would have seen from the research notes in the picture what we are covering today. So today we are covering, as I mentioned, the interesting case of Bobby Mackey's Music World. Now, it's kind of funny because, like now, I love a good spooky tale. But funny enough, now, I'd never actually heard of it before you mentioned it to me.
My goodness, that must be a first.
I know. Well, actually, I thought that I hadn't heard of it. And then I went back and watched one of the BuzzFeed Unsolved.
Good old BuzzFeed.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Because I would have been like, Shane, I always get the two mixed up.
Shane.
I would have been like Shane in that basement. I don't want to spoil too much, obviously, too early on. Going, ooh, come and get me, demons. You know. But anyway,
I won't say anymore. That line? What up, demons? It's me, your boy.
Yeah, feel free to scratch me, punch me in the face, try and kill me, throw me drag against me the ceiling.
Yep, drag me to hell.
I love that
drag
film.
Drag me to hell.
Have you seen Drag Me to Hell?
I have, yes.
I love that. I actually watched it 7 times in the cinema.
Wow. A little bit of a fan then.
Yeah, there are just a few other films that I've done that with. Wolf of Wall Street, Star Trek. No, wait, no. Source. Oh, anyway, see, we're going off on a tangent again.
Already. We're only 4 minutes in.
Exactly.
Well, almost 5.
So today we're covering Bobby Mackey's Music World. As I mentioned before, it's been commented as the most haunted nightclub in America. As usual, I will give you my... Again, balanced and... Oi. My balanced and reasonable view of it. And then Nell can come in with...
Skeptic.
Hey. I just want to make another disclaimer here. Right, so Nell and I were talking about this. Funny enough, we do talk about this off the podcast. And I think she's a bit of a non-believer with this one. Shun the non-believer.
Now, I never said I'm a non-believer. we will get into all that further in.
Exactly. Right, so I'll give the basic introduction, listeners. So, like I mentioned, Bobby Mackey's Music World is a nightclub in the south of America. I've forgotten where exactly it is, but again, Nelf will fill in with all the details. And it was bought by Bobby Mackey, I think back in the 80s or the 90s. If you don't know who he is, he's a very famous country and Western singer. And since he bought it, there have been numerous sightings and experiences with ghosts and even a demonic possession from one of the caretakers that used to work there. I think his name was Carl.
Yes.
With an exorcism in the kitchen.
That's going to really tickle you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, of all places to have an exorcism, it was in case the priest gets hungry. You know, he's like, oh, hold on a second, Beelzebub. I just need to go and grab a sandwich before I send you back to
hell.
Well,
you know, sometimes these things take a while. You're not yourself when you're hungry.
I'm not. I get really hangry.
No, that doesn't surprise me in the least.
I'm 6'3", you know, I've got to eat a lot. And I read that there's been over sort of 40 recorded sightings, incidents of different ghosts and supposedly demons over this time period. And I think Bobby Mackey should, instead of charging for tours, should start charging those ghostly spirits and demons rent.
God, he'd make a fortune, wouldn't he?
He sure would. And there are quite a number of interesting tales that we'll go into in this podcast, which is why it's probably going to be quite a long one, so buckle up. But actually, I quite like the history of the place as well, which I know Nell's going to cover, because she rarely misses much out on this. But I think it was built in the 19th or 18th century, and it started off as like a not meat processing plant, but like a what's the word? Like not butchers, what's it called? An abattoir sort of thing. And then it was like a casino for the mob, and then it was a hotel, and then it was turned into the nightclub it's known today. But it's just one of those cases that you'll read about it, listen to it here, watch it on YouTube and go, what the actual, you know, there is some stuff in here that makes you go, even me go, how do I explain that? But then other things you think, oh, what a load of nonsense, get a grip. But I'll leave now, fill in the blanks here. If you could do the honours, please.
Gladly. So, Bobby Mackey's Music World. It's basically a nightclub and honky tonk.
Oh, yeah, honky tonk, that word.
It's a great word, isn't it? Tongue twister. Try saying that three times once you've had a few vodkas.
And I'm sorry, American listeners, I'm not making fun of the name. It just sounds so funny, honky tonk. I've never heard it. I've never heard it used before. But I do love my country and Western music. But honky tonk just reminds me of, you know, what's his name? Mr. Frog from Wind in the Willows.
Oh, yes.
Zooming around on his little car going, honk down. Anyway, I'll stop.
Anyway, so yes, it's a nightclub and honky-tonk bar in Wilder, Kentucky, the US.
Okay.
And it's just a short drive from Cincinnati. And the area around it first started off in the 19th century being a slaughterhouse.
Okay.
And, well, I mean, There were apparently like kind of several like slaughterhouses and distilleries like in the general area.
Yeah.
So whether or not the actual slaughterhouse itself was in the precise location of Bobby Mackey's, mm-hmm. We're not sure, but there was certainly at least one slaughterhouse on the grounds.
Okay. And I mean, it's Kentucky and it's kind of like you wouldn't call it the Midwest, but you'd call it sort of Mid-East, north of the South, isn't it? Because it's, you know, near West Virginia, Indiana, Tennessee. So it's kind of like that agricultural farming area anyway, isn't
yeah.
it? I mean, KFC, chicken, so a lot in the area.
So, yeah, so it started off as a slaughterhouse, and eventually that was torn down and later became a home to a 1930s nightclub called the Primrose Club. And that was run by a gentleman called Buck Brady. Mm. Now, according to history, the Primrose Club became quite a interest, shall we say, to the mob.
Mm.
And they decided that they wanted a piece of that. And so, first of all, Buck Brady kind of said, you know, no, not interested. But yeah, it's the mob we're talking about here.
Have you not watched any movies? I mean, come on. You don't say no to the mob.
Exactly. And so after a few incidences of patrons and staff getting, you know, beaten up in the car park outside and general violence occurring, he finally gives in and passes over the building to the mob, which devastates him so much apparently that he actually goes on to commit suicide afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that's not the first record of somebody killing themselves.
Oh, no.
No.
Not by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, under the mob, the nightclub was renamed the Latin Quarter. And that kind of carried on until the 1950s before reopening again as the Hard Rock. Not to be confused with a Hard Rock Cafe that,
I was getting excited then.
Sorry to burst your bubble, but no. So, after the Hard Rock closed in the 1970s, due to some fatal shootings on the property, again, yet more death and violence.
Was it still owned by the mob then?
I'm not 100% sure. I think it may have been, but they either went either further underground or they were arrested and or killed or mob life, basically.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, after the Hard Rock closed its doors, it then, after a few years, became Bobby Mackey's. Bobby and his wife, Janet, bought the place in 1978.
Mm-hmm.
And and this was like a massive dream for him. Like he literally poured all his money into this. This was like it for him. It was a really big deal.
It was a big risk because, I mean, I was reading, two things. I was reading that, one, he had some good gigs going on his local circuit. So, you know, and he was moving to this place that he hadn't heard of and he wanted to open his own place to give him that freedom. But also he had his baby girl, didn't he, or something at the time. So it was a hell of a risk for the family.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, to just completely, you know, have a complete change of life, like, in all ways, that's a huge thing. That, like you said, that's like taking a massive risk.
Absolutely.
So the stories about the ghosts and various hauntings didn't actually really start up apparently until the building was turned into Bobby Mackie's Music World. And as PJ's really said, they had a caretaker, and apparently he was the one who kind of started up this whole thing about ghosts and spirits and the hauntings there.
Thanks, Carl. It's your fault.
Carl!
Carl! Carl.
So he would report that he would often see a young woman with long dark hair, and she was down into the basement to, you know, do some work down there or fetch something or whatever it is. And he literally finds Carl digging up the basement floor, and he's like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you would.
Yeah. The whole point of your job as caretaker is to care for the building, not dig it up. I mean, how many whiskeys had he had at this point to see this vision of this girl telling him to dig her up? Wow.
So in the end, he just kind of leaves Carl to it. It's like, you know what? I have more important things to be getting on with. You crack on.
Wait, what? He just said, oh, you dig it up. No, never mind, mate. You know, just knock yourself out. You dig up as much as you want to. Seriously.
Presumably.
what a chill guy.
And that's when the infamous well was found. That to this day still has a lot of rumour and superstition about demons and the like, and that apparently opened up a portal to hell, which is, you know, quite well known to this day. And according to Carl, that's where the whole, major hauntings started from, was from this well being opened up and unleashing goodness knows what, basically. And there are two big main stories connected to Bobby Mackie's, spirit-wise. One is the story of Joanna. Now, legend says, keyword being legend here, because
doing my job for me.
Because apparently, interestingly enough, there is actually no evidence to back up the story that she actually ever existed.
Well, there you go. There you go, listeners. My job's done. Thank you very much. And cut.
Thanks. So, the legend of Joanna. Now, apparently, she was the daughter of one of the mob bosses who took over the place from Buck Brady. And she apparently worked as a dancer in a club. Now, there was apparently another performer there, a musician, and they engaged in a secret love affair, and Joanna ends up pregnant. Now, as you can imagine, this did not go down well with her dear father. So, darling daddy decided that baby daddy had to go. And he basically apparently had him taken out and shot like a dog. Like the, you know, dastardly dog he is for taking his darling daughter's virtue and all that. So, Joanna is, you know, heartbroken by this. And so, in true Romeo and Juliet fashion, she goes into her dressing room and kills herself via poison. Now, like I said, you know, very interesting story, very, you know, kind of Romeo and Juliet kind of thing. But like I said, there is no actual evidence to support any of this, which is funny because one thing that the caretaker Carl claims is that he apparently discovered a journal by Joanna. However, funnily enough, no one's ever actually seen the journal.
Not even Carl.
Well, quite. I mean, you know, I don't know about you, but if I'd found a really old journal, you know, I would want to know. Like, you know, like, I would want people to know. Like, I would be taking it to only to like everyone I knew, and be like, look at this really cool thing I found, you know.
Yeah, so... yeah, because you sort of look at it and go, okay, Carl, so you're happy to tell everybody about this hell mouth in the well in the bottom of the nightclub that you found, but oh no, you can't possibly share a journal that you never actually found of a dead girl that nobody knows about. I mean, why is he coveting it so much? Why wouldn't he share that if he actually found him? Now? Hello? Okay, listeners, so sorry if you just noticed a pause there, but something really creepy happened.
Clearly the ghosts don't want us talking about this tonight.
Yeah, suddenly I lost Nell. I was jabbering away, laughing to myself. Nell didn't laugh, and I thought it was quite funny. Then Nell messages me going, oh, I've lost you. The chat's
like,
gone.
Where are you?
I know. So I think the Kentucky spirits, hey, I've drunk a few of those, made their way over and shut down our podcast. But we will prevail. You can't stop us, demons. Anyway, he'd found this journal by Joanna.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm sorry, but the guy goes and finds a hellmouth in the bottom of the nightclub and could tell everybody about that, but he can't possibly tell anybody about a really harmless book from a dead girl that nobody's heard of.
Yeah, that's questionable, I have to admit.
Good. Nell's, like, we've got this little, like, slider, and Nell's face is slowly sliding more towards my side now as the non-believer.
Never. Never. No. I mean, I'm not sure whether or not I've said before, but as much as I am a believer, I do like to have, you know, some kind of information to back up stories with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. So I'm not someone to just blindly go and say, you know, oh yes, that's haunted and that's haunted and that's haunted too, because why in the hell not, you know. It's nice to have some kind of logic to back up that.
Yeah,
you know, it's
absolutely, there's only so many glowing white orbs that fly across the screen on paranormal investigations that you can use as fact of supernatural existence.
Oh man, and that's an entirely new debate for another time, I think.
I just can't even.
Yeah, like I said, there's absolutely no actual evidence to back up that Joanna was even an actual person. I mean, even if she was, I find the idea of a mob boss being okay with his daughter dancing in the club, you know,
bit weird.
Yeah, a little bit. Like,
how close were they?
You know, mob bosses and crime lords want to try to keep their family, you know, as far from the danger as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, there is that, you know, the very caring father figure.
Mm.
But also, I would say it's more because of the sort of image he wants to project in the community.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know,
don't forget, in those kind of times, so a young woman dancing in a bar, that was kind of, you know, scandalous. Like, mm-hmm. that would not be seen as okay by the neighbours, you know.
No, exactly. Yeah, and I just want to caveat that as well, listeners. I'm not saying that if you're an exotic dancer at a bar that you're less than anybody else.
Oh,
I'm just
God,
talking
no.
about at the time, you know.
At the time, things were very different, you know. The whole woman being, you know, virtuous and everything was a real thing. And,
mm-hmm.
yeah. But I say that to some extent times have changed.
Yeah.
Depending on, you know, where you go, obviously. But, yeah, for the most part, it's...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Honey, gotta make the money.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a good enough ass, I'd be up there shaking it on a pole as well.
Oh, I don't doubt it. So, although the story of Joanna is questionable at best, the story of Pearl Bryan is, in fact, a story that is rooted in historic fact.
Oh, I'll be the judge of that, fair lady.
So, Pearl Bryan was born to Alexander S. Bryan and Susan Jane Bryan. And her father was an incredibly well-respected farmer in the community. And she was a graduate of Greencastle High School. And looking for, like, information about this, there are some articles I read that say that she was an art student, and others say that she was a Sunday school teacher.
Oh.
So I'm
not
too sure.
I read she was a music exchange student.
to be honest, I'm not entirely sure, you know, which is accurate. It may very well be a case of both are entirely accurate, because if she's just teaching at the Sunday school on, you know, a Sunday, then,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's quite possible that she would be a student during the rest of the week. So, you know, there's that.
The cracks are showing already, listeners. The cracks are showing already.
Sorry, honey, I'm never coming to your side. I'm sorry, it's not going to happen. And she had met through, I think it was a cousin of hers, a gentleman called Scott Jackson, who was a dental student at the Ohio College of Dental Surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them had engaged in something of a secret love affair. And let's say all together now, she fell pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this was a massive no-no because they weren't married. I know, shock, horror.
Disgusting.
Clutch the pearls.
How dare they?
And so, you know, Pearl... she was adamant that, you know, she wanted to keep the baby and marry Scott Jackson and, you know, they kind of be one big happy family.
Mm-hmm.
However, Scott Jackson had other ideas. He really did not want to be a father. He had no intention of marrying her. And so he pushed her to get an abortion. Now, abortion at this time was barely even heard of, you know, like, and even if it was, it would have been done in some kind of back alley kind of deal, like really not safe. On January 28th, 1896, Pearl Bryan leaves home, telling her family that she's going to see a friend in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And really, she has gone to see Scott Jackson under the pretense of going to see a friend in Indianapolis, when really she had arranged to go and see Scott Jackson in Cincinnati, Ohio, and he is promised to take care of everything. Quite whether she thought he meant, you know, that he was going to marry her, like, after all kind of thing, or who knows, like, you know.
She's read too many romantic novels if she's thought that.
Well, you know.
Get rid of the baby. Get rid of the baby. Oh, he might marry me. And also, that phrase, take care of, is very ambiguous.
It is, isn't it?
You know, it depends, again, how it's said. Oh, take care of our guests. Take care of them.
Well, absolutely, yeah.
It's all about that intonation.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's quite often not what you say, it's the way you say it. So,
absolutely.
So, she goes down to Ohio and checks herself into a hotel under a pseudonym. And then she goes to meet Scott Jackson and his fellow student and roommate, Alonzo Walling. Now, they then go on to slip cocaine into her drink as a way to try to get rid of the baby. Now, bear in mind, she's about 5 months along here. So, you know, it...
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
that's and to use cocaine as well, which is interesting. You think at the time they would use something like lye, you know, that sort of poison.
Well, apparently he did send various letters to her beforehand with basically recipes to like induce abortion, but apparently none of them worked. Now, whether that was the case or whether she's like, no, I'm not going to do this, like, no, just no, you know, that's...
But still, but, like, again, two things. I mean, why they use cocaine? Because I think it was only discovered in, like, the mid-1800s, so that the properties of it and the symptoms must... still be unknown. And they were what, dental students?
Yeah.
I mean, were they using cocaine in dental school at the time? I mean, can you imagine that now? Hello, sir. What are you in for? Oh, I need I've got a really bad sore tooth. Okay, just stick your nose on my wrist a second and give that a good sniff and you'll be fine for the rest of the surgery.
Oh goodness. Like, oh, I
have a bump.
I'm not a fan of dentists anyway, but oof.
I mean, it makes the procedure, I suppose, a bit more enjoyable. Not that I've ever done it. Oh, gosh. And then she was told on multiple times by him before she went and saw him to get rid of the baby. What was going through her brain to think that he decided to look after it? Oh, poor thing. Poor, naive thing.
It is really sad. I mean, you know, maybe she was hoping that he'd had a change of heart.
But did she know she was going to meet his roommate as well? Or did he just, like, spring Alonzo on her and go, hey, Alonzo's tagging on, he's a third wheel, you know, let's go have a drink at the local bar.
Quite possibly.
Sorry, at the saloon. Oh, we know you're pregnant, but let's go have a shot of whiskey or something.
Well, I mean, I guess in those days, like, the kind of dangers of
drinking
while pregnant, that's, yeah, that wasn't really well known, I don't think, at that time.
No, that was your medicine back then, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
Have a litre of whiskey, you'll be fine in the morning.
So they then apparently take her somewhere, you know, quiet, and attempt to perform an abortion on her. However, things go wrong, and she ends up bleeding out and dying. And apparently, according to the stories from Bobby Mackey's, Scott Jackson and Alonzo Walling were apparently part of a satanic cult.
Oh, they're really reaching there, aren't they? Okay. Where did that come from?
Again, the caretaker, Carl.
Oh, here we go. Yeah, that reliable source of information.
So not even a week later, Pearl Brown's body was found headless in Fort Thomas, Kentucky, on February 1st, 1896, by apparently a 17-year-old farmhand named Johnny Hooling. Now, you know, can you imagine getting up for work one day, going out into the fields, and being met with a headless body? Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
I'm sorry, my brain again. Weren't they in Ohio the week before, and now they've dumped her in Kentucky? That's like what, a 3-day coach ride?
It's my understanding that they wanted to try to kind of get as far away from like the crime scene as possible.
Imagine them getting into the stagecoach. Oh, what's wrong with your friend? Oh, nothing. She had a few too many to drink. Oh, my God. Just put a hat over a stump, you know. Oh, and I am just trying to pull this apart. It sounds ridiculous, but okay. Did they ever find the head?
No, unfortunately, no. So, as you can imagine, in those days, you know, crime scene investigation and forensics weren't what they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, police were faced with a decapitated body. They had absolutely no idea who it was, you know. The only way her body was actually identified in the end was by the tag in her shoes, because they were custom-made from Greencastle, Indiana, where she lived. Mm-hmm. And the person who made them was able to like put the serial number with the name, because those were the only like type of shoe that he'd sold. No, sorry, I think there were two types of that kind of shoe, and the other person was still alive, and so that kind of really narrowed down, you know, who the victim was.
So you can imagine if the police turned up to the other person's door that time. Knock, knock, knock. Well, hello. Hi. We're the police. What do you want? Well, you don't look dead. So, yeah. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Can we see your shoes?
Yeah. Are you sure you're alive?
So, according to the coroner, when they examined Pearl, she was found with multiple wounds across her back and her hands, which, you know, signified that, you know, they were defensive wounds. Mm. And he also indicated that she was decapitated while still alive.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, quite how much of that particular bit is true. I'm not sure, because how they were able to, you know, determine whether they, whether, you know, a victim would still be alive at some of decapitation, or whether they were already deceased.
I think they look at sort of the blood flow, don't they? And how the, I think it might be the arteries or something in the neck, I think how dilated or inflamed they are tells you how much blood had gone through at a particular point. Because if it had been done post-mortem, then I think the blood had already would have already cauterized. So like if she'd already been dead, then it wouldn't have traveled so far. I think that's how they start determining it.
If that makes sense. If you have any listeners with any kind of, you know, forensics qualification, then let us know. That'd be great.
We may even interview you for a future podcast.
Absolutely.
I'd actually quite like that. It'd be quite fun.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah. You can remain anonymous because I know you're not allowed to talk about cases. But anyway, carry on now.
So, police became aware of Jackson and Walling through Pearl's parents, who basically said, look, you know, she recently met this guy, this is his name. So, you know, they were pulled in for questioning. And at that point, I believe, you know, they were pretty much the only suspects, because police, like I said, they didn't really have very much to go on. Like, they had a headless body, but that was about it.
Yeah. Understandable.
So both men were eventually convicted of first degree murder, and they were hanged the morning of March 20th, 1897.
Mm-hmm.
As for the location of Pearl's head, it's never been found.
Mm-hmm.
Both men gave numerous accounts of where it could have been, including, you know, at the bottom of that of the Ohio River, in the well. You know, it, they kind of really led police on a bit of a hunt,
mm-hmm.
which never, you know, gained any kind of fruition, really. So to this day, people have no idea where it actually is.
And when you say it could have been in a well, are you talking about the Bobby Mackey well?
Yes.
Ah.
However, it's never been found there either, apparently. So where it is, it so, we really have no idea.
Whole case could have no relation to Bobby Mackey. It could just be Carl going on one of his benders and going, actually, I've read about this murder in another state. Let's pretend to link it to the nightclub so we can get more punters through the door.
There have been reports of a headless spirit roaming Bobby Mackey's. So yeah. Whether that is Pearl or not,
let's check her shoes.
It always leads back to shoes.
Exactly. All right, love. Like, just hang on. Let me have a look at your shoes a second. Oh no, no. Sorry, these are Puma. No, no, they're Adidas. No, you're not Pearl.
Interestingly enough, Bobby Mackey himself is actually a complete non-believer in all of this.
I knew I liked him. That's got sense.
Despite the fact that, you know, that a number of patrons and staff and apparently even his own wife experienced things while she was alive. At one point when his wife was about 5 or 6 months pregnant with their daughter, she was attacked in the basement at one point.
By what?
That's just the thing. Apparently, first of all, she felt like a force pushing her or like trying to like push her across the room. Then when she tried running up the stairs to get away from whatever it was, that force then attempted or actually did push her downstairs. Now, this resulted in a early labour, because, like I said, she was, you know, 5 or 6 months pregnant with their daughter at the time. Luckily, both she and the baby turned out to be absolutely fine. But yeah, she refused to go down into the basement again after that, which, to be fair, I can't really blame her.
Yeah, but again, I think it's just playing into the stories, because, hey, it brings Benjamins into the nightclub and lines the Mackie pockets, doesn't it? So any story is a good story. But then also, why would you say that if you're pregnant? I mean, a decent human being is not going to joke about their kid almost being killed before they're
born. No, absolutely not.
But then not everybody's a decent human being, and I don't know about the family, and I don't want to comment and seem like a dick, but but you just don't know.
You don't, no. No. Apparently, to this day, there's actually a sign up in front of the doors of Bobby Mackie's Music World, which basically says, "Warning to our patrons, this establishment is purported to be haunted. Management is not responsible and cannot be held liable for any actions of any ghosts or spirits on these premises." And this sign came around because apparently one guest of the bar tried to actually sue Bobby Mackie, as he claimed to have been attacked in the men's bathroom by an unseen force. Now, obviously this never went anywhere, because why would it? But basically, Bobby Mackie's lawyer advised him to put a sign up in the bar to, you know, as a way of making sure this kind of nonsense didn't happen again.
I've been attacked by many unseen forces in nightclubs, but it's only when I've got my head in the toilet that that force is seen. I'm possessed. Oh, wait, no, it was just the whiskey and shots and tequila.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I am a believer. I am, but, you know, like I said, it's a bar, there's alcohol involved, it's, you know, it could well have been a case of he just fell over, bumped his head, and, you know, knowing about the kind of the history of the hauntings of the place, decided to kind of run with that.
Yeah, he's an opportunist. He's an opportunist. I'd just love to see the accounts for Bobby Mackie's and see how much they take for food, how much they take for drinks, and how much they take for ghost and demon tours.
Oh, gosh, yeah, that must be through the roof. I mean, to be fair, I don't blame them.
No, absolutely. No.
I mean, interestingly enough, like when Carl started, you know, kind of telling the stories about the ghosts and stuff like that, and, you know, other people started to come forward with the same amount of stories, Bobby Mackie told them to, you know, kind of stay quiet about it all and not to tell anyone. Because, for one thing, like I said, he's a total non-believer, doesn't believe in any of that kind of stuff. And secondly, you know, he was worried that those kind of stories might actually frighten patrons off.
That's a good story to tell people. It's a good story. But he knows that they're going to bring that money in. And that's why they're all in cahoots. They're all naughty, naughty liars. And we're going to go visit the bar one time. And I'm going to do a Shane. I'm going to stand right next to the well. And maybe come out again. I don't know. I'll probably slip and fall down.
Honey, if you slip and fall, I'm not coming down there after you, okay?
We'll tie a rope around like they did. We'll be fine.
Just in case.
Yeah, exactly. And just going back to Carl again, though. Didn't he actually have an exorcism there? I mentioned it at the start. He actually had an exorcism.
Apparently.
Oh my gosh. I've just got this scene now of like the priest throwing holy water on him, and Carl's there, like the face from The Exorcist, and he's going, Your mother dances on the bar at Bobby Mackey's.
Oh, I was wondering what you're going to say there. It's like, PJ, please.
This is 18 plus. No one is underage listening to this. If you are, go to bed. It's past your bedtime.
But anyway, to this day has been reports from, you know, staff and patrons and the like there to say, you know, yes, they have had experiences. They've seen, you know, shadow people. They've had, you know, like things move on their own. They've been apparently scratched. You know, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of stories.
Do you know where else there are a load of stories?
Where?
Libraries.
My goodness, you actually venture out to a library once in a while, do you, PJ?
Excuse me, I am an author. Oh yeah, of course, guys. If you don't know, listeners, I am an author, and you can buy my book on Amazon. Got to get my plug in there.
Absolutely.
It's called Shivers in Time, and it's a horror. So there you go. Enjoy yourself.
To be fair, it is very, very good. I have it myself, and yes, it is well worth.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Right, Nell, so, I mean, we've gone over a few cases. We've given the overview of it. I keep saying cases. A few stories from Bobby Mackey's, given an overview of the nightclub, its history. So I think it's time for our judgment.
Dun, dun, dun.
Bring up the accused. So for me, I think... after hearing the case, my judgment is that it's a load of baloney. It's a load of opportunists that are just trying to make money from drunk patrons who love a good scare. And at $10, you're going to go, okay, let's go down and do this ghost tour. There's just not enough here. The one thing for me is Bobby's wife. Being pregnant, I mean, unless you're an absolute shit of a person, you're not going to make that sort of thing up.
Well, no, why would you?
No, exactly. So that's the one thing that sits with me that I'd love to investigate further.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What about you?
I'm honestly in kind of two minds about here.
Oh, can you hear that, listeners? That... the slider is coming up to non-believer status.
No, like I said, that's not gonna happen. Do I think that there are spirits at Bobby Mackey's? Quite possibly, yes.
You know, yeah, they're on the top shelf.
There. You know, given the amount of death that the building has had over the years, like, it wouldn't surprise me in the least. You know, you've got various, you know, suicides and shootings and goodness knows what else. Do I think... the place has demons? I'm not convinced. I mean, obviously, there's apparently the portal to hell in the basement. I think, if anything, there is some kind of gateway for spirits to pass through.
Okay.
Whether that a fully negative thing, I can't say for sure. Would I jump at the chance to actually, you know, go there and investigate and just, you know, check the place out? Absolutely.
Oh, like, yeah, definitely.
I would go over there tomorrow if I could. You know, I would be on the next plane.
Absolutely. In our future YouTube channel doing this, we are definitely going on that adventure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think that would probably be one of the top of the list for me, I think.
Yes. And we're going to live stream it so there can be no editing or anything.
Oh, yeah.
I've just got to make sure not to swear too much.
Yeah. I'll give you a you know, a nudge in the ribs if it gets too much. Like I said, I think that there's certainly a possibility that there's spirits there. Whether, but yeah, I don't know is my honest opinion. I don't know.
What do you think, listeners? You should let us know.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, if you know you have any stories from there at all, if you've been there, if you've you know had any like actual experiences, we'd absolutely love to hear about them. Or, you know, I would. PJ would love to try to, you know, debunk everything.
Try? These stories do it themselves. But yeah. Okay, so that finishes off episode 4, Bobby Mackie's Music World, from us, Spooky Shenanigans. You've been listening to PJ. Thank you very much for listening. And, of course, Nell.
Thank you very much for listening.
Please do follow our podcast on whichever app or streaming app you're using to listen to us. But also, please, if you do like what we do here, subscribe to our YouTube channels for more spooky stuff and true crime related stories. Nell's is Nell's Crypt and mine is Serial Chillers. Also, we have our Twitter and Instagram. Twitter is Official Spooky S and Instagram is The Spooky Shenanigans. So again, thank you very much for your time. Hope you've enjoyed this story. So please join us next week where we look into the spooky story of Nellie Bly, or as I like to call it, the real American horror story, Asylum.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one.
Can't wait.
So as usual, dear listeners, stay spooky. Bye.
Bye.